The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now we want to get into the sport, and of course the Olympics finally came to an end, and many of us will feel bereft not having the Olympics to watch, but there was other sport at the weekend as well. I'm joined by Cathal Dennehy, who's going to talk Olympic sport to us, and also by Cathal Mullally, who is broadcast with Off the Ball. Good morning to the Cathals.
Morning, Pat.
Morning, Pat.
Cathal Dennehy, we'll go to you first. You wrote an article yesterday which addresses, I suppose, the 400-metre final, where a Bahraini athlete called Salwa Nasser ended up with a silver, but also ended up in tears, only getting a silver, disappointed that she didn't get the gold. And you said that that record of that race, with her getting a silver, has to have an asterisk attached to it. Why?
Yeah, so Salwa Eid Nasser was the 2019 world champion. She ran the third fastest time in history to win that title. The two who ran quicker than her were both from countries where evidence later came out of state-sponsored doping, you know, in the early to mid-1980s. So those times do not have much credibility. And Nasser, you know, she was a big talent, but she won that 2019 world title in an astonishingly fast time, 48-14. However, it later transpired that she had missed three drugs tests or fallen foul of the anti-doping violations earlier on in that year. A fourth missed test occurred at the start of 2020, and that's when the authorities went and took the case. You're not allowed to miss more than two in a 12-month period. So she had missed four, basically, and certainly missed three, you know. And so they took two charges against her. One of them stood up. They only actually needed the three tests. They didn't actually need the fourth in the end. She was given a two-year ban, and it was essentially not making herself available for drugs tests. You know, for one of the missed tests, she said she was in Bahrain. She was actually in Dubai at the time. She didn't tell the authorities. Another of the missed tests, she said she was living in an apartment, and it turns out she'd actually already moved out of that apartment. She'd never updated her whereabouts, so they went to the old apartment. And in another missed test, she gave an address of building 964, which actually didn't exist. And she actually lived in building 954. The tester went there, tried to open the door, tried to knock on the door. There was no answer. She said it was unlocked. The tester said it was locked. The Court of Arbitration for Sport panel ultimately believed the person who was doing the drug test. They said they thought she was being deceptive. And they banned her for 2 years. And I think when you read the 65-page Court of Arbitration for Sport report, I don't think there's any real way to look at that other than coming to the impression that Salwa Eid Nasser was involved in a pattern of deception with the sports anti-doping authorities. Now, she's never tested positive, so there's no definitive proof she's done something like take drugs, but she has certainly shown a reckless disregard for the requirements of drug testing, which to me is very troubling when someone comes back after that, after a ban. And like, we have to point out she's free to compete, but there will always be a question mark in her career given how she was behaving in 2019 and 2020.
Now, will you explain to me the benefits of missing those key tests? Because it's a black mark against you, but obviously, and the mantra seems to be, if you know you're going to test positive, miss the test.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is something that Victor Conte, who was involved in one of the biggest doping scandals ever, the Balco scandal 20 years ago, he outlined that after he got caught and put in prison, and he actually turned whistleblower and, you know, clean sport advocate. And he wrote letters, public letters to the anti-doping authorities, just detailing exactly how it works when an athlete is doping. And as he explained in that, you know, you are allowed to, it's a three-strike rule. It has to be three strikes within 12 months. But the thing is, you know, once 12 months go by from your missed test, that missed test drops off your record. So essentially, you can keep doping with impunity until you are on two missed tests. And if you've taken a drug and the drug testers show up at your door, knock on your door, call your phone, and you've taken something, you know, in the last 12 hours or whatever, it's quite simple. You just don't answer the door. You take your one strike, and you can keep doing that until you're on two strikes. And then maybe if you're on the third strike, you have a tough decision to make. But even then, if you know you're going to test positive, it's better to take the whereabouts ban, which is 2 years, rather than the positive test, which is 4 years. So athletes who are doping very much know there is a bit of leeway there to get away with this, and they exploit the whereabouts rule to their advantage.
Now, people will wonder, if you're testing negative at the time of competition, what good does it do you? But isn't it the ability to train and recover? That's what the doping regimes tend to offer.
Yeah, you know, the doping in general, whether it's steroids or EPO, whatever drugs, drug of choice is, human growth hormone, it's not so much about a different level of performance. You know, if you're going to the gym 3 days a week or going for runs 3 days a week, you will no doubt get a benefit from just taking the drugs and continuing the same training. But the big difference they make is the laws of recovery. And that's why most of the doping that is done in the off season. It's done in the winter months when athletes are building strength in the gym, when they're building endurance out in the hills. Because essentially, you know, the natural laws of recovery for the vast majority of athletes would state that you have a hard day followed by an easy day. You can only really push your system maybe 3 days, most 4 days a week hard. You have to recover in between. But when you're doping, when you're taking steroids and testosterone, these athletes can recover literally overnight. So instead of three hard sessions a week, they're doing five or six hard sessions a week. So the volume of high quality work goes way up, which ultimately leads to the performance. And when it comes to the actual competition, you know, if you're taking drugs the week before an Olympics, you're stupid, basically, because there's no, well, there's, the benefit is minimal, but also the chance of getting caught is very high. So doping is something that happens in the off season, and it's done by increasing the speed at which you can recover.
Now, I suppose the reason we're concentrating on Nasser is because we had an athlete who was beaten into fourth place. She would have got the bronze had Nasser been disqualified for a doping offence, which we have to stress she was not disqualified for any doping offence. But the question then is, we focus on that because we have an athlete involved and we see an athlete maybe being deprived of something. But how widespread is doping then in the sport?
I would say quite confidently that it's a lot lower now than it was 10 years ago. If I think back to London 2012 and I just look across the medalists then, I've much less faith in the results I was seeing back then than I do now. I think now the Athletics Integrity Unit, which in response to all the scandal with World Athletics and the former IAAF, where the president was taking bribes to cover up drug tests back in around 2014, 2015, Seb Coe took over as president. He completely separated the anti-doping system from the world governing body. They're entirely independent now. And since 2015, the Athletics Integrity Unit has been absolutely scorched earth policy on drug cheats. They've gone after athletes everywhere. No name has been too big to fail in the sport, and many big names have failed. And that's the reason that ultimately athletics gets dragged through the mud in the headlines and it's bad for the sport. The impression is bad, but ultimately I believe the sport is significantly cleaner these days than it was 10 to 20 years ago because those procedures are so, so strict now that it's not impossible, obviously, to get away. And I've no doubt there were medalists in Paris who were doping, but I think the number of medalists who were doping just because those procedures now are so strict is much smaller than it was 10 to 20 years ago.
Well, then, you know, parking that for a moment and looking at Irish performances, we did very well. We didn't maybe get the medal we might have expected to in the women's 4x4, and the outside chance of a medal for Rashida Adeleke in the 400 flat. And I say outside chance because there were three people on paper who were faster than her. A creditable performance on the track.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's just a pity there wasn't that medal that just changes so much in terms of how a championship is viewed. But you do have to look at this objectively and say, look, Rashida was going in as an outside medal chance. She finished fourth. She was, you know, a quarter of a second or so off a medal. That's huge at the age of 21, especially. It's a huge performance. And then I think even more impressive than that is that women's 4x400-meter team. They're probably going in, talking to a couple of the coaches involved before the race, they were kind of saying fifth or sixth was their estimate. And, you know, coaching the athletes involved and to finish fourth and to be 0.18 of a second, that's just over a metre of track off an Olympic medal against some of the real heavyweights in global sprinting, Britain, the Dutch and USA, so much better funded countries, bigger population countries, better supported countries. For those four athletes to get that close, I mean, it can't be deemed anything but a success, which is strange to say when there isn't a medal at the end of it.
Yeah, and it took the British team breaking the British national record to beat Ireland into fourth place.
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of talking beforehand and I said if they get down to their national record was 3:22, was a brilliant run to win silver in Rome, the Europeans earlier this summer, and I kind of said, typically at Olympic level, if you run 3:20 to 3:21, you're on the podium. It's only ever happened once that a team has broken 320 and not won an Olympic medal, and that was in the 1980s. And I think I've probably outlined enough on this call what things were like in athletics in the 1980s and the lack of drug testing back then. But to run 319, I think that is a performance beyond the wildest dreams of any of those athletes and beyond even us in the media who are looking at it. And to think it didn't get a medal is galling for the athletes involved, because it was such a good performance that honestly, that 99% of global championships would have won a medal, but just not this one.
Now, you've got to say full marks to the French for their organising of the whole thing, with the exception perhaps of about an hour of the closing ceremony last evening, which was tedious in the extreme. But there was a wonderful opening ceremony. At the end, the latter stages, the hoopla of Hollywood being brought to the latter stages of the closing ceremony. So by and large, good, except, I suppose, the scandals over the boxing, which was the IOC's doing rather than the French having anything to do with it.
Yeah, I mean, that was definitely a case that rumbles on and I think will rumble on in terms of the gender controversy. And we saw with Dana Morehouse, the old issues with judging in amateur boxing still appear to be present. Even if you took off the Irish lens there and looked at that, it did seem like a farcical decision that cost Dana Morehouse a place in the next round. But yeah, I mean, that controversy is, I lay full blame at this. I don't blame the boxers involved. The Algerian, you know, they're not breaking any rules by being in Paris. But all sports in recent years, the vast majority of sports have enacted strict legislation that I believe is fully necessary to protect the female category from those who are kind of carrying residual benefits from going through male puberty, whether that's in cases of transgender or differences of sexual development. And all sports federations, from swimming to cycling to boxing, have taken action to protect that. The IOC sat in its hands. They made noises about inclusion. They did nothing. They ended up, due to governance issues in the IBA, running the boxing competition. And the result is that these athletes went and win gold, and, you know, natal females were having to step into a boxing ring with athletes with very likely differences of sexual development who are very likely benefiting from residual effects of going through male puberty. Again, we don't know that for sure, but there is evidence to say that they are XY, you know, benefiting essentially physically from the presence of male biology. So the IOC is, I think they've acted shamefully in this situation. And there was noises last night with Seb Coe, the current president of World Athletics, that he will likely take over from Thomas Bach as IOC president next year. And he has taken a very much stricter stance on this. So I would expect the IOC policy to change on this front if he indeed becomes IOC president next year.
Cathal, thank you very much for joining us. Enjoy your remaining time in Paris. Lovely morning there, I can see. So have a great time. Cathal Dennehy, who's an expert on all things athletics and other sports too, thank you very much for joining us. Cathal Boulani has spent his weekend focusing on domestic sport. Cathal, good morning.
Good morning,
Matt. You watch the Community Shield, as it's now called?
Yeah, pedestrian enough match, Pat.
But nil City all won at the end.
Yeah, well, they went to penalties and Manchester City got the job done. Not something that's going to live long in the memory. I think once the Premier League kicks off next weekend, it'll be forgotten about, not to mind later on in the season. But silverware for Manchester City. Erik ten Hag won the FA Cup there with Manchester United at Wembley earlier on this year. That was probably the result that kept him in the job. It's going to be a big couple of weeks for Erik ten Hag. Whether they get off to a positive start this season will be pretty important, you would imagine, for him to remain in the job as things progress this season.
Now, at home, we had the camogie. We had the three levels of camogie and three very good matches.
Three very good matches yesterday at Croke Park, Pat. Cork won the senior decider. That was the big one. They beat Galway by 116 to 16 points. Controversial enough goal in that one. Katrina Mackey scored it in the 36th minute. The ball popped out of her hand. It found its way over the line. Galway left a little bit disappointed with that decision. In the end, that was the difference. But Galway were 6 points down at one stage in that match, and they got back to level at one stage at 113 to 16. But Cork got the job done. That's their 30th title in all.
So is the suggestion it was an illegal goal?
It looked like that the ball might have been thrown, but I think in fairness to the Cork player, she was tackled as that happened and the ball kind of popped out.
So she dropped the ball.
And it dropped over the line, essentially. So that's how the goal was scored. Cork won the intermediate final as well, which was quite a remarkable feat yesterday. They beat Kilkenny by a point, 111 to 110, and then Tipperary had a 1 point winning margin in the junior final. That was a 12 points to 1-8 victory. So a big day for Camogie yesterday and a great day for Cork.
Now, you were looking back at the Olympics as well and the medals that got away.
Well, there were a few. I mean, it's very hard to pick holes in an Irish performance that was very good on the whole. Seven medals, best medal total, eclipsing the six in London in 2012, 19th in the medal table. But if you do look across, you've mentioned Rashid Adeleke, fourth in the 400 final, fourth in the 4x400 relay final as well. But beyond that, if you're to look at boxing, maybe Ireland traditionally have performed well in boxing, but Kelly Carrington obviously outstanding. But beyond that, maybe Ireland were hoping for one or two other medals. Spare thought for Ciara McGeehan, who missed out through injury, success in Europe earlier on this year, but didn't take part in this Olympic Games. Equestrian Ireland traditionally have been strong there as well. And then canoe slalom, where Liam Jegu early on in the Olympics had a real chance of a medal. He clipped the last gate of the 23, which is a 2 second
penalty. He lost 2 seconds and he went from second to seventh.
Exactly. So that's small margins.
And the rugby sevens, had they got a different draw, might have done better.
Yeah, exactly.
They were very impressive.
There were high hopes for the rugby sevens heading into the start of the tournament. So it might have been better, but it's hard to pick holes, as they say.
Cathal, thank you very much for joining us. Cathal Mullany from Off.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.